Good morning and greetings in the name of Christ. It's great to be with you again today. We got some winter, finally. Not a whole lot of complaints. It's good to be alive. It's a good time of the year to be alive. New Year's, ending of the old and beginning of the new. Sometimes it feels like spring's an awful long way off. But you know, we know it's there. We know it's coming. It's a time of transition. I'd like to talk to this morning a little bit about transitions. That's the title of what I was going to talk about. The world record right now stands at a men's running for a mile, stands at 3 minutes and 43 seconds. It's incredibly fast. 100 years ago, you were an amazing athlete if you could do just under five minutes. 3 minutes and 43 seconds. There's another discipline that also runs 1,600 meters, which is just 11 yards short of that mile mark. This also involves running. But the rate at which this mile is finished is 2 minutes and 54 seconds currently. It's a world record currently. So we have 3 minutes and 43 seconds versus 2 minutes and 54 seconds. Both sets of people are running a mile. Anybody want to hazard a guess at what's happening? What's the second discipline? None of us can run a mile under 4 minutes. So how do you run a mile under 4 minutes? Or how do you get something by running in 1 mile in less than 4 minutes? Okay, you know, that's a common concept that we have in Christianity, isn't it? It takes some superhuman, somebody very special, to go very far, very fast, and you have to be some special, unique person. Or you have to be drinking Red Bull of some sort. No. What's another? Anybody else? Practice. David says practice. That's helpful and essential. You've got to work at it, but that's not the only answer. I won't drag it out too long. Anybody else?
Teamwork.
Okay, it's a relay race. We've got four men, each running 400 meters. And they hand the baton one to the other. And in so doing, each running his absolute hardest, they can shave a minute off of what one man, one amazing athlete, can do by himself. None of them could run that fast by themselves. None of them could even beat the miler by himself. But each of them can run 400 meters very, very fast. And they can go a mile in 2 minutes and 54 seconds. Transitions. I'd like to talk about transitions. I'd like to think about some transitions that we see in the Bible. I already talked a little bit about transitioning from one year to the next. What's going to be different about this next year than about the year that we just came through? Transitions. What's going to be different about this generation? About the generation of the 30-somethings down to the generation of the 30-somethings up? What's going to be different? What's the transition going to be? If you would please turn to Genesis 18, verse 19. God's talking here about a man. Genesis 18, verse 19. And it says, "For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him. And they shall keep the way of the Lord, to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him." History is scattered with big people that flamed out. Started big, and it stopped short somewhere. But here God's saying about Abraham that this man is going to hand the flame down. And the flame's going to keep on burning. It's going to keep on going, one generation to the next. What do we have to do to maintain that kind of transition? Another person I think of is Elijah to Elisha. And as Elijah was taken up into heaven, and his mantle fluttered down to earth, and Elisha picked it up, and he was now left all by himself. What should he do? Walks back to the Jordan River, wraps up the mantle, and he says, "Where is the Lord God of Elijah?" And he hits the river, and it parts. And the transition completes again. One generation to the next one. Samuel was in a lot of ways David's spiritual father. And you see a lot of Samuel in David. But what about Solomon? Samuel to David to Solomon. What happened? There was a disconnect. David was the great man. What happened to Solomon? It was all about himself, and it ended with him. Christ to his disciples. Moses to Joshua. Paul to Timothy. The old dispensation to the new dispensation. All these transitions. We're always in flux, and we might not think of it that way. We might think, well, things are the way they have been and will be in my life. But the fact is, we are in flux. We make decisions every day that impact who we are at our core. And just in our Sunday school lesson this morning, we were talking about the different people that Paul met, and those Jews that he met. Some of them decided to keep on with what they were doing. Some of them decided that Paul had the truth. Either way, they chose. They made a decision. We think of change as being something big, heady, that happens in our lives. But often, it can be something very small. It can just simply be a hardening, or it can be a softening of our lives. These things are a process. We can either choose to seek growth, or we choose to seek ease. We choose to let opportunities ebb away, or we seize the moments. We can choose to seek the Lord while he may be found, or we can say, I'm pretty close to the Lord. He's within seeing distance. Doesn't matter if I make this little side route over here. Make allowances for small pet sins, manageable deviations from God. And always we're changing, but we can't see it. Maybe we can't see it until we look back 20 years or 10 years. And we say, well, how did I end up here? What happened? I used to feel the fire burning, the fire in my bones. Now I feel cold. The things we do become who we are. There's no such thing as keeping ourselves at a safe distance from God. Memories of the joy of salvation are not what constitutes new life. They're rather an indicator that we've made a transition from being alive in Christ to being spiritually cool. Living in a culture of discipleship, living in a Christian church, blending in as well as possible, when those who might give us a problem aren't around, is not Christianity. It's hypocrisy. Do that for long enough and you're going to become a career hypocrite. You're going to have deceit like a second nature. You're also going to be putting stumbling blocks in seeking people's lives, causing the enemies of Christ to mock at you, losing your own soul and with blood on your hands. We're always in flux. Another thing we sometimes do is we try to save our strength. Think of a candle. We've got a candle burning up here. And this candle wants to live. This candle doesn't want to get burned up. The candle doesn't want to die. So what does it do? It has to go out, doesn't it? When we try to save our strength, when we say, God is just too much, I just don't believe I can handle it, we're effectively putting that fire out. We say, well, I'm not a big candle, I'm just a birthday candle. And look at him over there. He's one of those great big waxen things that stand about 18 inches tall and 4 inches around. But you know, if the fire is real, small candles can light big ones. It's not important the size of the candle. It's not important the amount of your gifts. It's important that your fire is real. Another thing that shuts us down is bitterness. It shuts us down little by little, relationship by relationship, until we are emotionally and spiritually desolate. We don't want to be hurt. We don't want to be used. Are we willing to be poured out like wine, like the song says? I think it's so amazing to see a person not rusting out, like the other song says, but burning out for God. We think of big men, and know we've had conversations about the big men in Christianity and in the Bible. Somebody name a hero of faith to me in the Bible. Just pick one at random.
Abraham.
Okay, let's talk about Abraham a bit. Some of the high points in his life. What are some of the things that happened to Abraham? Sorry? Okay, he had God asked him to sacrifice his son. Anything else? He had to leave his homeland. What else?
Buy a burial spot for his wife in God's promised land.
Okay, that's an interesting one. He had to buy a burial spot for his wife in the land that God had promised he would give him. Okay, choose another one. Who's another hero of faith? Moses. What do we know about Moses' life? What happened to him? That's right. That's right, he did. So he was away from those people for 40 years out in the wilderness as a shepherd. What else happened to him? Was he appreciated? His own people turned against him. What about John the Baptist? He's a big one. What happened to him? How did he live? Camel's hair and honey. Was beheaded by a corrupt king. Pick any one of the big men of God or the big women. Joseph, Daniel, Elisha, Isaiah, Jeremiah, all of them. Look at all of them and look at their lives. You're going to have something in common. Job. What happened to Job? Everything. If a man had ever had anything, everything taken away from him, that man was Job. Everything was taken away from this man. What was it about these men, about these women? You know, we could take these people and we could look at them and we say, you know, I want to be just like that person. I want to be like Daniel. I'm going to purpose in my heart and I'm just going to do whatever Daniel did. Or we can take somebody in the 20th century, 21st century, and say, that person is who I want to be like. And we can try to be like them. We can do exactly what they did or try to. Because when I get old, that's the way I want to be. You can do all those things. And the light of real life still dims down behind your eyes. The passion could still bleed out of your fight. The fire in your bones become cold ashes. To try to find fulfillment by copying people, big people, is a dead end. It's not going to take you anywhere. Even if these people really were on fire for the Lord. What we need to do is find the force that pulled and enlivened those people. The vision that drew them. What separated the Abrahams, the Moseses, and the Jobs, and the Daniels, the apostles from the people around them? Did they try to copy each other? They didn't try to. They weren't perfect people. They weren't drinking Red Bull. They weren't supernatural. They were regular people. And if you'd meet them in this room here, they would look like every one of us, and they'd have weaknesses and foibles just like us. What was it about them? What was their secret? The secret was they didn't have a secret. They didn't have any secrets left. They had nowhere to run. They didn't run. They didn't hide. They didn't try to protect themselves. They didn't try to save their strength. They opened themselves to God and left themselves completely vulnerable to Him. They said, "Here I am, Lord." And we call these people great men. We call them great women. They were only made great by becoming very small. God, it wasn't so much that they were great as that God was able to greatly use them. God has great plans for His people. He has great plans for people right here in this room. There are people to be reached, walls to be torn down, souls to save. And for reasons that we don't understand, that we can't understand, God has made Himself in a very real way dependent on His people. Why did God take away everything from Job? Was it to show him that He loved him? Was it to help him in his spiritual life? Why did He? He needed him. The Creator of the universe put Himself in a position where He needed a man. And He still does. There's potential for beauty in the rubble of seemingly ruined lives. There's promise of strength in our tired hands and weary feet. Those dead ashes, cold and gray, blowing up in our eyes to blind us, can once more be red hot. God makes all these things possible, but we have to give ourselves completely to Him. Okay, that's one of those little cliches, one of those little catchphrases. We give ourselves completely to Him. When we experience that, that is no cliche, folks. We can warm ourselves by the fire of somebody who is on fire for God. And it's a great experience to be there. You know who I'm talking about. You come away from a conversation with that kind of a person, and you feel close to God. You feel like you've been blessed. But it won't do us a bit of good if we don't build our own fire, or if we don't allow God to light our own fire. We can try to emulate those people, copy them, do exactly what they do. But it's going to end in disillusionment, either with your own weakness or with them. You're going to say that they couldn't have it either. That must have been a fake. Or maybe they were just exceptional people. The only way we can truly experience the power of God in our lives is to follow Him, is to truly experience Him for ourselves. The only way to meet Christ is at the cross. And the cross must become part of our daily existence, peeling away the non-essentials of our relationship with God and opening us up little by little to His power and love. And we look at these people, the Moseses and the Abrahams and the Jobs and the Daniels, and we say, that light was just so absolutely bright. What must have been like to live by that person? You know what? I think rather than viewing them as a fire, I think we should view this as a portal. That as God uses a person, opens wider and wider, and His light shines through brighter and brighter. Not sons, not little sons, but portals to the great Son of God. God's giants are the ones who have learned that they are so small, they need God to lift them up. So weak, they have to rely on His strength. So sinful, that they cling to the grace of God, to the grace of salvation. They're children who depend on God for everything. They have learned that without Christ they are absolutely nothing. They know that the blood of Christ is their only claim to grace. They pray, knowing that their life depends on their relationship with their Father. They're small people. They're humble people. They're uncomfortable with praise. They have an uncanny sense of what's real and solid, what is tinseled and hollow. They're gentle people filled with power, peacemakers, blazing with inner fire, and they're absolutely unstoppable. They're the fingers of God in a world of imposters, a world of hypocrites, pompous, self-serving pontificators. And once you meet one, you'll never forget him. Not because of who he is, because meeting a person like this is a little bit like meeting God himself. We call these little people God's giants. And God entrusts himself to them. People just like you, people just like me. And he wants to do the same with us. What must God think when they who call themselves Christian are full of dead man's bones? Those who call themselves Christians have the act down right, have the words down right, have it all down pat. But as soon as nobody's looking, there's somebody else. To be a Christian is not to follow a set of rules. It's not to do a certain, not to follow a certain formula. It's to open ourselves up to God. Let's open ourselves to God and truly say, here am I, Lord. I'm weak. I'm sinful. But everything I have is yours. Whether it means that everything that I hold dear has to be second place, that's okay. Because you know what? The Solomons, the Herods, the Pilates, with their titles, with their money, with their fame, are nothing compared to these little men. May we all become so little that God can actually use us. Let's kneel for prayer.